everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me.
As always, thank you for all the support so far on our podcast.
Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. Share with your friends and write us a review.
But only if it's a good one.
This week, we are talking about a case that happened in 2000. Here is an interesting fact from that year.
The oldest living land animal on Earth is a 192-year-old tortoise named Jonathan.
My question would be, straight away, who named them Jonathan and why?
I don't know why that made me laugh. It was just the image of this big 192-year-old tortoise. See the way it could say 192 then, but I couldn't say it before.
But I wonder if it's named after someone, like, you know, like its original keeper or something.
It's probably named after someone's granddad, isn't it? Jonathan. It's
192
like
years old.
Yeah, but I think 192 years is like in tortoise years, isn't it? Maybe there's 10 tortoise years.
No, I think it's 192 actual years.
Oh, so like 192 human years?
Yeah.
I still can't say
because it. Tortoises are classed as a type of dinosaur, aren't they?
Yeah, they're reptiles.
Yeah, but they're like a bit prehistoric, so...
But if you look at them, they are, aren't they?
Yeah, they look like some kind of dinosaur. Right, everyone, let's get on with this week's episode. This is the strange disappearance of Zeb Quinn. January the 2nd, 2000, Asheville, North Carolina. 18-year-old Walmart employee Zeb Quinn finishes his shift and heads out to meet a friend. He tells his mother he'll be home later, but he never returns. The days that follow unravel a chilling mystery, one filled with cryptic messages, a wrecked car, a bizarre phone call, and a web of deception. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. Zeb Wayne Quinn was born on May the 12th, 1981, in Asheville, North Carolina. He was raised by his mother, Denise Flahakis, and grew up alongside his older sister, Brandy. His father was largely absent from his life, making Denise his primary guardian. Zeb was the kind of person everyone described as kind, soft-spoken, and responsible. He had an easygoing personality, though he could be shy around new people. Those who knew him well said that once he felt comfortable, he had a great sense of humour and could be quite fun to be around. Academically, Zeb was an excellent student. He attended T.C. Robeson High School, where he excelled in his studies, earning a spot on the honour roll multiple times. Teachers described him as hardworking and bright, someone who paid attention in class and rarely caused trouble. He had a few close friends, but he wasn't the type to seek out large social gatherings. He enjoyed video games, outdoor activities, and cars, the last of which would play a major role in the events leading up to his disappearance. Zeb was especially close to his mother. He still lived at home with Denise, and the two had a very strong relationship. He was not the type of son who would just disappear without a word, which is why when he failed to come home on January the 2nd, 2000, his mother's concern quickly turned to panic. I think that's how you'd react as well, to be honest, because...
He sounds a bit like you, doesn't he?
I'm also not the type of person that would just disappear without a word.
Well, if you disappear without a word, you know, I'd have a helicopter hired looking for you because I'd know that was out of the ordinary. You see, that's why sometimes when these things happen, the police don't give the parents credit enough because they know their own children, don't they? So, you know, if our Jack did that, I'd think, oh, he'll be back in 2 weeks or something. If you did it, I'd know there was something wrong. That's the difference.
Well, I think it just depends. Like, every family or every parent have different relationships with different children, don't they?
Yeah, because they're different people.
And our relationship is that we talk quite a lot on the phone or text or whatever. So if I was to not ring you for 2 or 3 days, you'd know there's probably a problem.
Yeah, which is why our little group is called, what's it called? Is everything
okay? Are you okay, babe? Because that's all you ever text me.
And then sometimes you text me going, is everything okay? Are you all right?
If I've not heard from you for 2 days as well.
Which is very rare.
It was Sunday, January the 2nd, 2000. The second day of the new millennium. The holiday season had just ended and Asheville was settling into the rhythm of the new year. That evening, Zeb finished his shift at Walmart on Hendersonville Road around 9 p.m. He was scheduled to leave with a co-worker named Robert Jason Owens, who was 21 years old at the time. The two had planned to drive together to look at a used car that Zeb was considering buying. Robert and Zeb left the Walmart parking lot in separate vehicles. Zeb in his 1990 Mazda Protege, and Robert in his Ford pickup truck. Robert followed behind as they headed north on Hendersonville Road, but something strange happened along the way. Just 15 minutes into the drive, while travelling on Long Shoals Road, Zeb suddenly flashed his headlights at Robert, an indication that he wanted him to pull over. Robert later told police that when they stopped, Zeb seemed distressed. He told Robert that he had just received a page on his beeper, a message that had clearly shaken him. Now just for context, this was the year 2000. Cell phones were becoming more and more popular, but many people, especially young adults and professionals, still relied on pagers for communication. A beeper wouldn't display a full message, it would just show a phone number, which meant Zeb had to find a payphone to call back. Robert said that Zeb told him he needed to make a call immediately. The two pulled into a nearby gas station, where Zeb got out, found the payphone, and dialed the number from his pager. What happened during that phone call remains unknown, but according to Robert, when Zeb returned to his car, he looked shaken and panicked. He told Robert he had to leave right away. Without giving any further explanation, Zeb jumped back into his Mazda and sped off, heading in the opposite direction, leaving Robert behind. That was the last time anyone saw Zeb alive.
Very strange.
What do you think of that so far then?
Well, I don't know what that beeper message was all about. I mean, obviously, if he was distressed or, you know, panicked about something, that number was significant to him. Obviously, that number belonged to a person, so why do they not know who that number belongs to?
Well, I'm assuming that there might be a way that they can trace the number, but I think we'll get to that in a bit.
Because then there's some story attached to that number, isn't it? Obviously, whoever that person is, he's got some kind of relationship with.
Well, it sounds like he recognised the number in some way, didn't it? Because why would he be shaken and panicked if it was a number that he didn't know?
That's what I mean. He recognised the number, so it was somebody significant to and something significant. But I wonder why he never told Robert.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't sound like he said to Robert, I need to make this phone call because, I don't know, Patty's just sent me a page and
yeah,
I need to ring her.
Wouldn't you ask him? Wouldn't you say, what's wrong? Well, maybe he did.
Well, from what I understand, I don't think these two were really, like, close friends. I think they were more just co-workers. And they've been chatting about Zeb wanting to go and see this new car. Because he's only 18, it's his first car. He wants someone to go with him. And I think Robert maybe has an interest in cars or something. And he's been like, do you know what? I'll come with you. Let's go after work one day.
Yeah, but I think if you knew someone well enough to ask them to go somewhere with you, you would say what was wrong, I think, even if it was a brief explanation, like, you know, oh, so-and-so's sick, or there's been an accident, or whatever. So, I find it hard to believe he didn't say anything. I mean, it's just curiosity, isn't it? You'd say, is everything all right? What's wrong? But whether he told him or not is a different story.
I was just going to say, let's not forget that this is Robert's side of the story that we're hearing right now, because Zeb, as we know from the title of the episode, has disappeared. So, we don't know for sure that Zeb didn't tell him who it was. This is just his account. The next morning, Zeb's mother expected her son to come home, but when he didn't, her worry grew. Then something even stranger happened, a phone call that would only add to the mystery. At 9 a.m. on January the 3rd, Walmart received a phone call. A man on the other end of the line told the manager that he was Zeb Quinn and that he wouldn't be coming into work because he was sick. But there was one major problem. The voice didn't sound like Zeb. The manager found the call suspicious and reported it. When police traced the call, they discovered it had come from Robert Jason Owens. When questioned, Robert admitted that he had made the call, but claimed that Zeb had asked him to do it. According to Robert, Zeb had contacted him that morning asking him to call Walmart and say he was sick. Robert said he was just doing his friend a favour. But if that were true, why hadn't Zeb called his own mother? Why hadn't he returned home? Denise knew something was terribly wrong. That same day, she filed a missing persons report with the Asheville Police Department. Zeb Quinn had vanished without a trace.
So this, well, it's been pinned onto Robert now, hasn't it? But I was going to say, it was obviously somebody who knew his work, Zeb's work schedule.
Well, it's not looking very good for old Robert here, is it? Because...
No, but what he says could be true. He could have got a call off him and said...
Well, it could be true, but why would you ring your mate and say, or your co-worker and say, hey, can you just ring Walmart and tell them that I'm sick? Why would you not just ring up and say you're sick?
I don't know.
That's weird.
No, because I've done that in the past, you know. I've said, oh, you ring up for me. But the fact that he's not called his mum is the main thing here, isn't it? You know, when he's been in such regular contact, he wouldn't want his mum to be worried, because they know each other so well. It'd be like you know, if you were off somewhere, you'd ring me, wouldn't you, and tell me, I think, I hope anyway, So that I didn't worry, because, you know, I'd be sitting there going out of my mind with worry, so...
Well, also, Robert works at this Walmart as well, so did he think that the manager wouldn't recognise his voice? So he's ringing, pretending to be Zeb, but all you know, he works with Zeb in the same place, so the manager obviously knows Robert as well.
So he's saying the last time he saw him was when he sped off in his car.
After and he received this random page.
The way he knew this was because Zeb had called him and asked him to call in. It is a bit suspicious, isn't it?
Very suspicious. 2 weeks later, police got their first big break. Zeb Quinn's car was found, but instead of providing answers, it only raised more disturbing questions. On January the 16th, a passerby noticed a light blue 1990 Mazda Protege parked in the lot of Little Pig's Barbecue, a restaurant on Hendersonville Road. When police arrived, they discovered several bizarre items inside the car. A hotel key card, a bottle of hair gel, a live black Labrador puppy, completely unharmed, and most chillingly, a drawing of a pair of lips with two exclamation marks scrawled on the back window. None of these items belonged to Zeb. And there was something else. The driver's seat had been pushed far back as if someone much taller than Zeb had been driving. It was clear that someone else had control of Zeb's car after his disappearance. But where was he? The most baffling part of all that for me is the puppy.
What the hell? Why was there a black Labrador puppy?
I've never heard of anything like that.
No. If Robert's telling the truth and Zeb did speed off down the road, there's a possibility he could have been carjacked or something, isn't there? And it sounds like it was a man that was driving it just by the way the car seat was pushed back. But how tall was Robert?
Well, let's just talk about these things individually. So they found the hotel key card. Now, from what I understand, the hotel key card was not linked to anywhere that Zeb had ever been or stayed at or any hotels that he'd ever visited.
So that hotel key card, though, if they knew which hotel it's from, did they not go and question the hotel employees to see who that belonged to? Surely they'd be able to reference it some way.
The next thing was also a bottle of hair gel, which to me is neither here nor there. Like, he could have just had a bottle.
Is that a joke? Neither
here hair nor there.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
But I mean, he could have had a bottle of hair gel in his car anyway.
Yeah.
Now, the live black Labrador puppy that was unharmed is just so bizarre to me. Because what they're actually saying is they believe that this car had been put there by someone else. So they've drove Zeb's car to this location and yeah. They've put all of these items in the car.
Yeah, but I mean, do they think they were putting it on purpose to throw them off the track or that it was whoever was driving this car just put them in there and just left them there?
No, I think they're thinking that they've all been put there to throw them off the scent.
That Labrador pup is not something any normal person would think
of. It's just so random, but maybe, as I always say, maybe this is the conversation that this person wanted people to be having. Like, they want people to be baffled and be like, why is there a black Labrador puppy in the car?
It kind of sort of suggests that a woman was involved, doesn't it?
Well, with the lipstick mark.
Yeah. Well, a drawing, it says there, doesn't it, of lips with exclamation marks. But also, you know, like kind of girls like dogs and the hair gel and a hotel key card. Is it kind of saying he was having a relationship with somebody maybe or?
Possibly, yeah. And I believe that the pair of lips that were drew on the window was actually drawn with lipstick as well. And there was two exclamation marks. So is that some kind of clue?
Or just a complete red herring again?
Oh, and the last thing is that obviously the seat was pushed way back to where Zeb wouldn't have been able to drive the car at his height. So it does kind of lean into the fact that whoever was driving it was a lot taller. I don't know how tall Robert was, but
I tell you what, though, if ever we bumped anyone off, we'd have loads of, you know, sort of things to do, wouldn't we? To make it like an unsolvable case, we pushed the car seat back. The Labrador puppy's a new one on me, though.
With Zeb Quinn's car discovered under suspicious circumstances, investigators began digging deeper. The bizarre items left inside the vehicle only added layers of confusion to the case. But one thing was becoming increasingly clear. Someone was trying to mislead investigators, and their prime suspect, Robert Jason Owens. From the very beginning, Robert Jason Owens was the last known person to have seen Zeb Quinn alive. But as police continued questioning him, his story began to change. As they always do, change the stories. Originally, Robert told police that after Zeb received the page on his beeper, he had left abruptly and alone, seemingly in a panic. Robert claimed he had no idea where Zeb had gone after that. But then, when pressed for more details, Robert provided a new piece of information. He now claimed that after Zeb sped off, Robert himself had gotten into a car accident on the way home. He told police that shortly after parting ways with Zeb, he had been involved in a single car collision, causing him to suffer a head injury and a broken rib. Because of this, he said he had been unable to report to work the next day. Now, at first glance, this might have seemed like an unfortunate coincidence. but when police checked local hospital records, they found no report of Robert being treated for a car accident that night. Even more suspicious, his injuries didn't appear consistent with a typical vehicle crash. There was no police record of a wreck at the location he claimed that it had occurred, and when officers examined his truck, they noticed something peculiar. The damage to Robert's Ford pickup truck was not fresh. It appeared to be older, as if it had been damaged prior to the night of Zeb's disappearance. So if he hadn't been in a crash that night, what really happened? So we've got this typical thing here where he's now changing his story over time, isn't he?
And why do criminals do that, though? If he is, you know, he's an alleged criminal at the minute, but why do they do that? Why don't they pick a story and just stick to the story?
I think I can only imagine when the police originally, you know, initiate that investigation and they start speaking to him right at the beginning, he's probably in a bit of a panic mode, isn't he? And he's probably just thought, let me just say the quickest thing that I can think of. I would imagine they don't really have time to think it all through.
I think the main thing they do is try to distance themselves from the victim, don't they? So him speeding off, Zeb speeding off.
And I had no idea where he went, and that was it.
Yeah, so that kind of takes him out of that scene, doesn't it? You know, he's gone off, he doesn't know where he's gone, but he's removed from him right away. But, you know, these injuries he had, did the police not notice them? I mean, are they saying that they're consistent with some kind of fight then, maybe?
I think, yeah, what they are saying is that it's not consistent with the car crash, basically. But why? I don't really understand the relevance of the car crash. Is he just telling them now, oh, by the way, I was in a car crash, to explain the injuries that
he
had?
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I got from that then, that he's thought about it and thought, do you know, I've got this damage to the vehicle, so I'm going to say I was in a car crash and that's how I got these injuries. But obviously they've sort of ascertained that the damage to the truck is from a previous night or week or whatever from before. So that's not consistent either. He's trying to flesh out this story, isn't he, to cover all the things they might actually find wrong with it.
And as always, in turn, it's actually making him look more and more guilty.
Yeah, because he then starts adding bits and changing them, and then he's told a lie, so he's now got to tell another lie on top of it, so that's the way it goes.
One of the most critical pieces of the puzzle in Zeb's disappearance was the beeper message he received just before he vanished. Remember, this was what had caused him to panic, pull over, and rush off in the opposite direction.
Can I just say, though, did that even actually happen?
Well, that's what I said before. We've got to bear in mind that everything we're hearing right now is from Robert's perspective.
I would have thought they'd be able to check that, though. You know, in them days, I think those beepers, because I had one of them, I thought it was great, you used to stick it on your belt, you know, it was weird. But there must be something like a telephone record, you know, the way you do with your mobile now sort of thing. So there must be some kind of record, mustn't there, of did that call actually go through or not?
Well, and also it said originally that when you received a message on your beeper, it would just be a number that flashed up and you'd have to go to a payphone to ring. So surely they can go to the payphone
and check the records.
And kind of, see who he called. The message he received had shaken him to his core. Investigators traced the pager number and discovered something shocking. The call had come from the home of his love interest, Misty Taylor. Misty Taylor was a young woman Zeb had been romantically interested in, but their relationship was complicated. She was dating another man at the time, a man who was jealous and controlling. The man's name was Wesley Smith. Police now had new questions. Did Misty send the page herself? Did Wesley Smith send it to Law Zeb somewhere? Or did Robert Jason Owens have something to do with it? When police questioned Misty Taylor about the page, her response was vague. She denied sending it and seemed unaware of any reason why Zeb would have panicked upon receiving it. Wesley Smith, her boyfriend, also denied involvement. But could it have been a trap? At this point, investigators suspected that someone had lured Zeb away that night, but they had no concrete evidence to prove who was responsible.
Sounds about right to me. The big question here is, did Robert know Wesley Smith? I mean, what I'm saying is, you know, when Zeb said he was going to look at a car, did Robert then say, oh, I'll come with you, and then it was worked out between Wesley, Robert and Misty, or, you know, or just the two men to get him there, and he said, well, I'll go with him, pretend we're going to see a car or something. So did they know each other, do you know?
So as far as I'm aware, there was absolutely no connection between Robert and Wesley. But that's not to say that, I don't know, I'm just clutching at straws, but maybe they've crossed paths somewhere, they've got into a conversation, Wesley's told him, well, there's this annoying kid called Zeb that wants to go out with my girlfriend and I'm not having it, would you be willing to bump him off for me if I paid you, I don't know, whatever.
Or deliver him to us or something like that.
Yeah, so there's not to say that something like that's happened, but As far as we're aware, there was no connection, which makes this case even more baffling.
I would have thought the police would have looked through all these theories, though. Surely, if we're thinking about it, it must have occurred to them that that could have happened.
And if that is the case, where does that leave Robert then? Because, like you were saying before, what motive does he have?
I don't know. I don't know what the backstory is to those two. You know, they worked together. Did he owe him money? Did he just not like him? Was the payoff, you know, enough for him to do something criminal?
Or is it just that he's a bit thick and he's making himself look more and more guilty by telling lie after lie?
Well, it's like circumstantial evidence again, isn't it? And sometimes there is circumstantial evidence that is just doesn't mean that a crime's being perpetrated. So maybe it just looks bad for him and he just makes it look worse and he might have absolutely nothing to do with it. And what happened? The beeper could have gone off and he could have sped off like that, and that might have been the last time he's seen him.
Or could the beeper message have come from Wesley?
I think it's more likely that it came from him.
And when he's seen the number, he's thought, shit, I know that number. It's obviously not going to be anything good, is it?
No, but I would have thought you could check these numbers. That's what makes me think. They said it came from Misty.
I know, but it would make more sense.
Well, it could have been him using her
exactly.
number.
Exactly, it would have made more sense then, because it looks less guilty.
The thing is, it was just a number, so if he saw Misty's number, it'd just be Misty. He wouldn't know what that call was about.
Yeah, so why would he panic then?
Yeah.
It's all until just a bit bizarre, isn't
until
it?
Until he called and maybe she said, listen, you need to get off the road or something, or...
Well, the thing is...
Oh, she might have said something like, can you come and help me because he's beating me up or something, or... Can you come here now or something? But the fact that he was panicked,
I was
going to
say, we're forgetting the fact that he was panicked when he's seen the number straight away. This is before he's even called the number.
So maybe there was something going on beforehand, like the boyfriend's got involved, you know, this other boyfriend's got involved and she's warned him about him and she's maybe even said to him, listen, if anything happens, I'll call you or something. And it's just made him panic.
I think that's the more realistic situation, to be honest. For years, Zeb Quinn's case sat in limbo. No arrests, no new leads, no confirmed suspects. His family was left with only questions and the agonising possibility that they might never find out what happened to him. But then, in 2015, more than 15 years after Zeb vanished, Robert Jason Owens made headlines again. Can I just say as well, I don't think they actually ever officially named Robert as a suspect. I think they were just questioning him because he was the last person to see Zeb, basically. This time, he wasn't just suspected of involvement in a disappearance. This time, he had been charged with murder. And what investigators would uncover in his home would send shockwaves through the case of Zeb Quinn. On March 15th, 2015, the Buncombe County Sheriff's Department responded to a disturbing missing persons report in Leicester, North Carolina, just a short drive from Asheville. A young married couple, Christy Codd and Joseph J.T. Codd, had suddenly vanished. Christy was a rising star in the culinary world, having competed on the popular show Food Network Star. She and JT were known to be devoted to each other, and what made their disappearance even more alarming was that Christy was 5 months pregnant at the time. The investigation quickly led authorities to a name they already knew all too well, Robert Jason Owens. Robert had been hired to do home renovation work for the Codds. He was one of the last people to see them alive, and when police questioned him, his story immediately raised suspicions. Where have we heard that one before? Then they searched his property. What they found was horrific. Authorities discovered human remains inside a wood-burning stove behind Owen's trailer home. The remains were charred beyond recognition, but forensic analysis confirmed the worst. They belonged to Christy and JT Codd. Robert later confessed to killing the couple, but claimed it was an accident. He told police that he had run over JT with his truck by mistake and in a panic killed Christy to cover it up. So how is that by mistake then?
Well, but the thing is, he's having a lot of car accidents, isn't he?
But investigators did not buy his explanation. Not only had he killed them, but he had dismembered their bodies and attempted to dispose of the remains by burning them. Even more disturbing, he had stolen valuables from their home, including Christy's laptop and jewellery, and used their bank cards after their deaths. Robert Jason Owens was arrested and charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder, as well as dismemberment of human remains.
Well, it sounds like he's definitely criminal-minded.
Well, and I mean, I'm not making excuses for him, but this doesn't necessarily mean that he did anything wrong in the Zeb Quinn case.
No, it doesn't, but how many years after that case was
this? This is 15 years later.
So in those 15 years, this is just things he's been found out for or he's been linked to. there could be many other things that he's been doing that no one's picked up on.
And this whole time, for 15 years, the Zeb Quinn case has gone completely cold. They've got no new evidence, they've got no new suspects, they've got nothing until this happened and they recognise the name.
This is the commonality, isn't it? This is, his name has come up twice now that they know of. And both times he was the last person to see somebody. I mean, that's not... That explanation's ridiculous, isn't it?
But that can't be a coincidence, can it? That he's been the last person to see.
Well, I didn't believe in coincidence, right? But the fact that he knocked somebody over and then killed his wife to cover it up, why would you go that far? You just wouldn't, would you? So, no, that doesn't ring true to me.
And, you know, that's just actually clicked in my head when you said it like that. Could he potentially have ran Zeb over?
That's where I was
by accident, in inverted commas, and then done something to dispose of his body as well?
He's saying that Zeb flashed his lights for him to get out, stop and get out of the car. But did he actually flash his lights to Zeb to get him out of the car and then just rammed him with the car? Wouldn't there have been blood at the scene though, maybe? I don't know. Maybe just to disable him and then... I mean, what was the motive though? He sounds a bit like a robber, doesn't he? Like he's always thieving things and...
But then also, we've got to think about the damage that was on Robert's car that the police kind of said wasn't consistent with a car crash.
Yeah.
So was it consistent with hitting a person?
Maybe. But the thing is, to do what he's just done, and that's a pregnant lady as well, that goes beyond the boundaries of a normal criminal. Okay, he might have knocked the husband over and then he might have killed the wife, but what he's done there is he's dismembered the bodies. That's a woman with child as well. And his mindset has been able to do that. So that tells me that there's something in him, like psychopathic, because you just couldn't do that. A normal person would just run away, or you just hide the bodies, or, you know, wouldn't you?
Also, you would think, if you've knocked someone over by accident, like, obviously the moral thing to do it is call 911, isn't it?
And say, his wife's there, so you'd just say, quick, someone's seen you do it, or we'll know.
Or try and help. But the answer is not to then kill the wife because you're scared.
And then do what he did, but also then take the laptop and everything. So to have the presence of mind to actually go and take the laptop and other valuables from the house, that's...
Well, I think we can safely say it was not an accident and he meant to rob them the whole time.
Yeah, definitely.
And they were just in the way.
By the looks of things, just from that incident, it shows that he's capable of doing a lot more than that. And as I say, that's his mindset. And he wouldn't hesitate to do that. So God knows what's happened to Zeb. But I really don't know at this point where he fits into the story. It sounds like it's him, but this call on the beeper from this woman with her boyfriend, I mean, that sounded more like the likelihood before to me that the boyfriend was involved. But now I'm going back to the beginning again now, thinking it's Robert.
For years, Robert Jason Owens had been the last known person to see Zeb Quinn alive. Now, police had undeniable proof that he was not only capable of violence, but of murder and body disposal. This development reignited the investigation into Zeb's disappearance. If Robert had brutally murdered the Codds and attempted to destroy the evidence, had he done the same to Zeb all those years ago? Investigators executed a search warrant at Robert's property, now believing it could hold crucial evidence. In March 2015, forensic teams combed through the land surrounding his mobile home in Candler, North Carolina. They used cadaver dogs, ground-penetrating radar, and excavation equipment, and what they found was deeply unsettling. Buried in the ground, authorities discovered fragments of leather and cloth, which appeared to match the material of clothing Zeb had been wearing when he vanished in 2000. They also uncovered unknown human remains, bones, teeth, and possible bodily fluids. However, forensic testing was inconclusive, and they were unable to confirm whether the remains belonged to Zeb. Still, this was the strongest lead in years. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say I think that was Zeb.
I think that was Zeb. I mean, it's just a bit sad that they were inconclusive, but inconclusive means they can't say yes or no. So there's still a real strong possibility that it was him.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it was a no.
And all this forensic testing they can do, they wouldn't say, would they, that the cloth was consistent with what he wore. The fact that it's consistent with what he wore, the fact that they can't say definitively whether that them bone fragments were his, it's on his property. There's a missing person. He was the last person to see this missing person. We know he's got a propensity for violence. It all adds up to, again, it's circumstantial evidence, but to me it's irrefutable, really.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, it's like they're putting a little jigsaw together and piece by piece it's pointing more and more back towards Robert now, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, how thick can you be to bury a body on your own property, though?
That's what I never understand.
I mean, he's got a truck. Why didn't he just... I don't want to assist any criminals here, but why didn't he just drive them out of the county or something?
No, but also that other poor couple that he killed as well, he's put them in the log burner in his house. Or in his, at the back of his trailer. Are you that... That's what I mean, though. It sounds to me like he's a bit thick.
You know, it's like crapping on your own doorstep, really, isn't it? You wouldn't do it, would you?
For over 15 years, Zeb Quinn's family had waited for answers. And though authorities still hadn't found his body, they now believed they had enough circumstantial evidence to formally charge Robert Jason Owens. On July the 10th, 2017, a grand jury indicted Robert Jason Owens for the first-degree murder of Zeb Quinn. The charges were based on his history of violence and body disposal, his inconsistent and suspicious alibi from the night of Zeb's disappearance, the planted evidence in Zeb's car, and the clothing fragments and remains found on Owens' property. This was the moment Zeb's family had been waiting for, a formal accusation. But there was one major problem. Robert refused to cooperate. Even though he had confessed to killing the Codds, he denied any involvement in Zeb's disappearance. He never admitted to harming him, never led police to a body, and never revealed what really happened that night. With no physical proof of Zeb's remains, Robert's defense team was able to delay court proceedings for years. In 2022, after years of legal battles, Robert Jason Owens agreed to a plea deal. Instead of facing the death penalty, he pleaded no contest to second-degree murder in Zeb's case. This meant that while he was convicted, he never had to admit what actually happened. Owens was sentenced to a minimum of 14 years and 3 months in prison, a sentence that ran concurrently with his previous life sentence for the Codd murders. For Zeb Quinn's family, it was bittersweet. They finally had a conviction. They finally had someone held accountable. But they still had no body, no confession, and no clear picture of what truly happened that night in 2000.
I think that's 14, just over 14 years for... I know he's already got one sentence, and that was a consecutive sentence, but for that murder, second-degree murder, 14 years. I mean, how was it even second-degree murder? It's because he wouldn't admit to it, really. Basically... got off with a lighter sentence just because he wouldn't tell them what happened.
Well, and also I think because they had no, you know, concrete evidence on him, he didn't have to tell them anything because they didn't really have anything on him other than, you know, the circumstantial part of it. But also...
He's not admitted to it, so his stance is, well, I never did it, but they're saying we've got enough evidence to make it probable that he did it, so, and that's what they got him on, really. But it was obviously him, wasn't it?
Well, and the thing is, it's... what difference does another 14-year sentence make when you're already serving life in prison anyway?
Yeah, but what does... Well, in the States, life in prison normally does mean that, doesn't it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's got no hope of ever getting out. So, on the flip side of that, why would he not just admit to it then? Because he's never getting out anyway.
I don't know. People are weird. There's a case that I think I'm going to do maybe next week. And it's a similar kind of thing where, you know, they don't admit to it, but you know full well it's them.
But is it just, like a power play?
It could be. In this case, the one that I'm going to do, it is. Definitely, you know, just that control till the end. I mean, Ted Bundy did it. They were going to execute him. You know, Ted Bundy was a US serial killer, you know, one of the worst ones ever, who murdered young women. And he bartered with the police. He kept giving them crumbs of information because he was, you know, on death row to sort of stall that happening. Others have got nothing out of him, but he knew far more than what he said.
I think it's safe to say that Robert knows exactly what happened that night. He was, in my mind, he was 100% responsible for whatever happened to poor Zeb. And he's just not saying it for some reason.
So those calls on the beeper may have been real, but they probably didn't really mean anything. It might have just been, you know, that sort of like a...
Well, it might have just been now in my mind that Misty has just sent him a beeper message. Maybe he actually wasn't panicked at all. And maybe he just went and called Misty from a payphone to have a little chat.
And maybe that's when he's got him. But why would he do it, though? What was the motive with that, though? That's what I don't understand. He seems to be... It's like a robbery thing to me.
I was going to say, well, what was the motive for him killing the other couple as well? It was literally just to rob them.
That's what I think. But what did he have on him that he thought he could take? He was in his own car, so he couldn't really drive the car off, could he? He must have done, actually, I think. He must have... Because where did that car go then? And they found it in that parking lot, but he must have taken it somewhere.
And so does that mean that we think that Misty Taylor and Wesley Smith are just innocent bystanders in this story?
It sounds like it now. It sounds to me like he's tried to set them up a little bit, really.
Yeah, like he knew the situation between those yeah. three, and he's kind of used that as a...
He's tried to make it look like she's been in the car, maybe with him. I don't know.
Yeah,
I really don't know
with
this one.
Yeah, by putting the lipstick and all yeah. that stuff.
You know, they worked together, so he may have told him a few things. He might have thought he could trust him. He might have seemed like a perfectly normal person, as most weird psychopaths do, so...
So Robert probably concocted this whole story about him being panicked from the beeper message, and, you know, he knew it was going to link back to Misty because he knew that it was Misty that had sent the beeper message.
And he knew that Misty had a boyfriend or ex-boyfriend or whatever, so he thought, well, there's a, you know, viable suspect. But he
and
must
there's
have,
a motive.
He must have planned this then, I think, before he went out, so he must have offered to go with him. Maybe he said, well, I'll come and see that car with you, or he suggested it or something, but to get him on his own, but why though? Do you think he may have thought that he's got, like, bank cards and money on him? Because he was going to see a car, he may have had cash on him. And, you know, for some people, taking someone's life for, like, I don't know, $1,000 or something is worth it, isn't it?
To this day, Zeb Quinn's remains have never been found. The full truth of what happened on January the 2nd, 2000, is still buried. Perhaps literally. Robert Jason Owens will likely spend the rest of his life in prison. But for Zeb's loved ones, there is still no closure. Until Zeb is brought home, until his family can lay him to rest, the case will never be truly over. Did Robert Jason Owens act alone? Was Misty Taylor or Wesley Smith involved in the setup? What was the significance of the beeper page that night? And perhaps the biggest question of all, where is Zeb Quinn? So what's your bottom line for that story? What do you think?
I think it was him, Robert. And I did think Wesley and Misty were involved, but now I don't think they were. I think he's kind of set them up. And I think if they were involved, when he got done for that second murder, he would have took them down with him as well.
Yeah, he seems like he'd be that type of person, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's no honour among thieves, is there? So I don't think he would have tried to blame somebody else. So I think if that was actually the case, he would have dobbed them in.
I think the fact that he is not cooperative at all, he won't give the police anything, kind of really says a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like when they take the Fifth Amendment, isn't it? You know, you don't say anything. I mean, I know sometimes people are advised to do that, but a lot of the time it's just because they just don't want to incriminate themselves with anything.
And I really believe that the remains, that the other human remains that they found in his garden, on his, you know, on his land, I think that is, whether they can conclusively say that or not, that's what I believe.
I think that is him, yeah. And I think that's sad for his family because they've had no confirmation it's him, but they probably think that themselves and know that themselves.
Well, I also think it sounds like Robert Jason Owens is, you know, he was dumb enough to put that other couple that he dismembered in the wood-burning stove on his own land. So why would he not be dumb enough to bury Zeb in his back garden?
Yeah, it kind of follows a pattern, doesn't it? But I think, I tell you this, I think he's definitely killed other people, or there's been other crimes, definitely, you know. Because that happens a lot with... He's a little bit like a serial killer, isn't he? I think he's probably killed other people. And then years later with serial killers, you know, there's crimes that they hint at and they can never pin on them, but they know there's people who've turned up that fit the MO sort of thing, and but they can't pin it on them, so but they think it's very likely that they're their victims as well, and they're very often not attributed to them because they can't prove it. So I think he's one of them.
What a sad story. He was literally only 18 years old as well. He was just a kid.
Yeah, exactly. And someone who's 21 at that time seems a lot older.
And just an 18-year-old kid that would just literally wanted to go and buy his first car. Like, it would have been a really exciting time for him.
Yeah, he sounds like he was like a trusting kind of thing. You know, worked hard, didn't have the best of jobs probably, but went into work, did his job, was trying to save to get things for himself, had a close family relationship. Just seemed like a nice kid, didn't he, really? And then this just shows you never know who you're working with, do you, or you bump into, or they only show you, really, don't they, what they want you to see. And as always, I'll say it again, you know, these psychos and things, if they look like a psycho and acted like a psycho, then they wouldn't get away with what they do because no one would go near them. So that's part of the plan, isn't it? Right, everyone, that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.